Welcome to The Edges of Lean. I'm Bella Engelbach, and in this podcast, we explore the human and creative side of lean thinking, unusual places where lean thinking is practiced. We meet people who are practicing continuous improvement in many different flavors and styles. So come along with me on a journey to the edges of lean. Episode 11, Continuous Improvement and Creative Thinking. A long time ago, in a break room far, far away, I got into a heated debate with a fellow improvement professional over the topic of standard work. I had just completed my creative problem-solving facilitation training and was excited about using my new skills. My colleague was pretty sure that creative thinking had no place in the creation and implementation of standard work. I argued that if you wanted to have the best possible standard work, you would have to use creativity and many experiments. I guess you could say I'm stubborn, because I still think I'm right. In fact, I'm more convinced than ever that creative thinking is absolutely necessary to get to the highest levels of effectiveness, efficiency, and employee engagement. And today, my guests, Kimberly Green Goldsborough and Erling Kakanad, are here to share their perspectives on lean, continuous improvement, and creative thinking. Kimberly Green Goldsborough and Erling Kakanad, thank you so much for journeying with me to the edges of lean.
Thank you for the invitation.
Good to be here.
It's great to have you here, because this is actually, of all of the topics in lean and continuous improvement, this is the one that is just my absolute favorite, which is not to say that all the guests of all my other podcasts are also not my favorite, because of course everybody is my favorite. But this is especially dear to me because the journey of trying to understand how creativity and lean and continuous improvement work together has been really a life journey for me. And I know it has been for the two of you too. And I'm just so excited to hear what you have to say about it. So I'd like to start with you, Kim. And just, if you could just give us, the quick story of Kim and her career in continuous improvement. How did you end up doing what you're doing, and where are you working?
Kimberly Green Goldsborough serves as a senior process improvement specialist and trainer for the Environmental Protection Agency's Office of Continuous Improvement. Her experience within the discipline of process improvement runs throughout her extensive 35-plus years career, including co-developing the original and all subsequent versions of EPA's flagship Lean Starter Kit, providing strategic leadership throughout EPA's process improvement journey, and providing direct problem-solving support to EPA teams. Her traditional education includes a graduate certificate in creativity and change leadership from SUNY at Buffalo, an MS in public policy and management from Carnegie Mellon University, and a BS in engineering from the University of Pittsburgh.
I am currently working at the Environmental Protection Agency and just wanted to go on record as saying that I am engaging in this conversation as an individual and not necessarily representing the agency and the agency's perspectives. I've worked at EPA for nearly 35 years. And coming into the agency, I had the great fortune to be introduced to what was then total quality management, and really engaged and learned a lot and applying the tools and concepts relating to total quality management. We did that for several years, the focus of the agency transitioned as well as my position. I've held several positions in various parts of the agency over that time frame. So I had moved on to, having started out in protecting groundwater, then I went to air and radiation, protecting indoor air, And my most recent stint where I have been working in the administrator's office doing a myriad of special projects. So I was reintroduced to lean process improvement as a part of my work responsibility about 12 or so years ago. But right before that, I had the opportunity to learn about creative problem solving. So, you know, my interest was in creativity and creative problem solving. So I had about a 5-year stint where I was able to really dig into the research on creativity and creative problem solving. And then I just kind of rolled that into my interests and activities as I am now working in process improvement.
Wow. And that's so interesting to me that you were doing creative problem solving, CPS, at the same time you were doing TPS or something, you know, something related to the Toyota production system in the agency. So Erlen, I think your experience is a little different. Tell us about you.
Erlen Kakanad has been in process excellence leadership roles in the financial industry and IT for over 15 years. She has a master black belt in Lean and Six Sigma, an MBA in total quality management and HR, and a PhD in organizational effectiveness and innovation. She's worked and led global teams in many geographies such as Canada, Mexico, the Philippines, and India, along with her teams in the U.S.
Yes, I've been in the Lean Six Sigma role for about 15 years. I have been in the financial industry and financial services. So my experience is mainly in banking, and currently I'm employed with Principal Financial Group. And I also have to say that the views that I'm going to share on this podcast are just my own and my own experiences, and it's not the anything related to the employer or what the employer states. So it's an independent view, my own individual opinions. I have been in Lean Six Sigma role for over 10 years, and I came to a point where I started realizing, oh my gosh, only if we knew how to solve this problem more creatively. How can we get people to problem solve and come up with unique ideas as we solve problems for in the financial industry in terms of creating products and services? My focus and my experience was always around processes. I joined the banking industry right after the mortgage crisis. So a lot of the work that came to the banking services, especially in the mortgage side, where I was leading process improvement initiatives, were around how can we solve for the customer and keep our customer in their house or in their homes and do anything to help them to stay there from a financial side. So my focus was also on the other side, like bankruptcy and loss mitigation, such as the foreclosure and all the processes that kind of go into that side of those of banking and finances to really make it even easy for the borrower. So that was something that we had to really think very creatively to do it differently, especially with banking and finances, that financial industry is very highly regulated. And it becomes very challenging in terms of for organizations to sort of play a balanced role between meeting regulatory requirements as well as fulfilling customer needs all at the same time. So process, creative problem solving and process design becomes an imperative part of what we do for our customers. So that's my experience coming into this. I'm also a PhD candidate and a student, and my research has been, I'm studying at Drake University in Des Moines, Iowa. And my interest has been around innovation and creative thinking and how to solve creative thinking. What are the barriers in the process? How can we solve for that? And very recently, I've been taking an intersectional approach where I'm looking at creative problem solving and innovation for women and women in the organization, and how, what are the barriers and how can we do better? So that's kind of my research and my paper in PhD. That's kind of an ongoing work here that I'm also doing.
Did you find either one of you, as you were learning Lean and Six Sigma, that it was sort of anti-creative? Was there a sense there for you, either one of you?
You know, I've always seen the intersection in the essence of what, you know, process improvement is. It's the application is where we run into the problem. And even, you know, recognizing, now I must say that, you know, as I moved into process improvement, although I had experience in the creative problem solving, I did not immediately, you know, I have not, even to this day, I don't think that they're nearly as combined and as integrated as they should be. So, you know, I don't want to give the impression that we've cracked that nut, because there are still so many barriers there to making the two meld together. But in their essence, I know they should. I mean, they just really blend. It's the application. It's, you know, getting to, you know, especially when you're trying to, you know, in the divergent component of any aspect of problem solving, you know, getting people to be free enough to really be creative is where I always run into the problems.
Interesting. Erlen, how about you? What was your sense? It's because it sounds as if you were doing the Lean Six Sigma and then the creativity piece. Came to you later. I'm sure you've been creative your whole life, though, in your personal life. So how did you feel that Lean was naturally needed, was creative? It just, what was it for you?
Yeah, for me, it's similar to what Kim, what you shared. I think for me as well, working through the Lean, there was a part of the application piece which needed so much creativity so that we can quickly help people adopt the change and apply and go through the different process of the new process. But for me, I also felt like if I kind of just go back a few steps into the process engineering side of it, so when we did look at a problem and we said, oh, let's go to this board and let's try to now look at it and do our A3. And as we went through the process, there's a part where you want to come up with the countermeasures. Once you identify all your root causes, you want to come up with countermeasures. And there, that's the point where I felt like the divergence of exactly what Kim said, the divergent thinking, was just done by a handful of people. And they did it like really well. And then as I went to different teams, I was seeing that not everybody thinks like that, or I have to push as a facilitator, push them to think about different things. But I would prefer them to do it on their own as subject matter experts. So that's when I started digging in a little bit into creative thinking. And I started looking at how do people think? They are visual learners. They like, you know, somebody just likes to be told something versus somebody likes to do something. Just kind of what are the sensory learnings in people's journey, and how do they really conceive information, and how do they think? It was something that I started digging into until that's when I kind of bumped into the Kata approach. And the Kata approach really starts to get people to think about different ways to solve the problem, come back, retrospect, understand what went well, what didn't go well, let's test and experiment. And that test and experiment is something that I took from Kata practice, which is, again, one of the Lean approaches or one of the Lean tools. Mm-hmm. And I think we have the tools, but I think when we get into, at least for me, when I got into my Lean practice, I discovered Lean at a different phase of my life when I thought, what else can I do to help people think differently and solve this problem? It didn't come right to me when I went through my practice and learning of Lean certification. Mm-hmm.
So maybe we should just take a pause for a second here and have one of you actually define divergent thinking, because not everybody knows what divergent thinking is. So, Kim, you want to?
Well, I'm rusty on my definitions, but as I think of divergent thinking, it's thinking more broadly. It's expanding mm-hmm. the universe. It's looking beyond and getting more, versus trying to bring things in and converge on something. So the divergent element is casting a wider net.
Right, and because you all are listening to this, you can't see Kim. She's holding her hands out so we can see the wideness of divergent thinking. So that was one of the things that for me was, Kim, you mentioned A3 and Erlen, the Carter. And I have found both of those to be places where there's so many opportunities for both divergent and convergent thinking. But what I noticed, and I think it's similar to what you saw, and perhaps Kim, what you saw, is that, for example, when people were doing an A3 and they were coming up with countermeasures, that people would stop really quickly, And Erlen, as you said, there are some people who are natural divergent thinkers, and they would come up with another one, and they would be met with impatience by the people mm-hmm. who would say, all right, well, it sounds like we've got enough potential countermeasures, let's just move on, because I think in some businesses, convergent thinking is perhaps rewarded a little bit more than divergent thinking. And then the same thing with the cutter, even when you're thinking about, well, you want someone to say, well, what's the current condition? People can stop after naming four or five things in the, states in the current condition. But if you ask them that great creative problem solving question, what else? Uh-huh. You're going to find more and more. And some people get impatient with it. It's not comfortable to be asked that question, what else? Because we want to head to divergence and we want to decide right now what our next experiment mm-hmm. is going to be.
I think from a divergent thinking standpoint and convergent thinking standpoint, both are essential for project execution and success. Divergent thinking is when you want to come together and explore. I call it the exploring phase. You want to think about what are different ways to go to the moon? And convergent thinking would be, how can I create the best, most efficient and safest spaceship to go there? So I think that's an analogy to think about as for your audience, as you're thinking about what's the difference between a divergent thinking and convergent thinking, is understanding what phase of the project are you at. If you're in the project phase where you really want to identify and explore, like sky's the limit, right? What are different ideas for us mm-hmm. to do this differently and capture that different market? So you want to then think about the skill sets and the people who would think that way and create the conditions in your meeting so people can openly speak about those ideas and challenge the status quo. And then convergent ideas are more around what are the different things that's allowable, acceptable within regulations, right? You put all the conditions there or some of the criteria, and then you're trying to bounce it off through those criteria, and you're doing that type of critical thinking to say, okay, so we have certain conditions. How can we make the best out of it, but still appreciate this idea, this creative approach, and execute it within the limits and of the company? And because we all want to stay in the business, so it's one of the
right, yeah. And in divergent thinking, you mentioned, Erlen, I think this is really important. This idea that you have to have an atmosphere that an environment that invites mm-hmm. divergent thinking. So what have you done? And Kim, I'll just flip this over to you first. What have you done to create that safe atmosphere for divergent Ooh. Thinking?
And I'll just, looking at some of the experiences that I had over the years, a lot of, when I'm working process improvement, it may simply be explaining to my cadre that, what we need here, what are we trying to do here? Just being very clear, even posting some basic rules about divergent thinking, you know, deferring judgment. Explaining to them that how it may be difficult, and explaining to them why it's so important. And, you know, why is it difficult? You know, the whole idea of, you know, if you're working with people that have had success in our environment, a lot of the reason they've had success is because they were quickly able to come to conclusions. They were rewarded for making fast decisions.
Which so is a divergent thinking. I mean, convergent thinking.
Completely convergent, exactly. So I'm asking them to do something that's contrary to what they've done to get to where they have gotten. So, you know, just educating them, explaining that, and really just trying to get them to understand what's going on so that they can help themselves control, you know, help control themselves and not make the judgments that are so common. Now, one of the things that I have done in the past, and I haven't had an opportunity to do in the past, maybe in the last year or so, is, you know, in addition to just having basic hand tool, just toys to play with, kind of lightening the atmosphere. Of course, we can work that way. But there have been, I've had many engagements where I would bring full on craft kits. And as a part of the day's activities, you know, set aside time where they were all required to make something. You know, and depending on, you know, a lot of this was with retreats, and depending on what the issues were that a particular team was trying to address, you know, I would build a craft around it. You know, something as simple as gathering up a bunch of pens. Everybody's got 10 extra pens in their desks. You know, I'd gather up all the pens and I'd bring in some glue and some feathers and fabric, and I would require them, I'd set up some instructions, you know, build a pen, you know, decorate a pen, or, you know, I had notebooks, you know, I had, you know, everyone had to, you know, with scrap paper, just kind of decorating the top of a notebook. Everybody gets a notebook and we're going to do this for an hour. So just completely taking them out of their comfort zone, out of their normal environment, having them do something ridiculous and watch them transform, loosen up, have some fun, you know, because fun, you know, in addition to safety, you know, fun is a really critical element of setting people up to be successfully in diverging. So, you know, I've had a chance to, you know, try some really crazy stuff.
I want to be in one of your workshops.
I like that, Kim. The, you know, just setting the conditions, the informal conditions, right? Like it's an informal environment, you know, just let your guard down. There are these fun things. It's like handing you your crayons, box of crayons back to you that you, you know, left back at post-kindergarten or I don't know when, right? We all forget our crayons then. But just giving them that creativity zone, the creative zone to help out. So that definitely touches some of the things that I do as well and I practice. And people look forward to coming into our process engineering rooms. But I think when it comes to creative thinking, there's one part where we are creating the conditions for the people who participate in the process improvement and the creative session. A boot camp. But there's another piece of it is the practitioner. So if you're a practitioner and like I'm a practitioner, you know, Kim, you're a practitioner in Lean and you're facilitating, it is equally important for us as practitioners to be creative in our thinking, to pull the team together. So some of the things that I have incorporated with people who I work with who are facilitators is education. One is try and understand different aspects of your business of your industry and try to go to a different conference. Like, don't always go to your own industry conference or your own operation excellence conference. Go to something totally different. Last year, I went to a robotics conference, and oh my gosh, I came back with so much learning. And I think I was the only one over there who was like the non-geek in IT there, like a non-IT person. But I came back and my process improvement lens completely changed, because now I look for, oh my gosh, we could just automate that using robotics, which we do have in our organization. And the rest of it, we can try and utilize some other creative pieces, reskill people differently so that we can gain the most efficiency in the process. So it's also important for a practitioner to kind of do something different. It could be listening to a different podcast, completely out of your genre. One day, every morning in the week, pick something out different. If you like writing, you know, doing some sort of different writing, do some sort of different creative work like drawing or crafting that will just make you think differently. Mm-hmm. So those are some of the examples I feel like as practitioners, we should also be very purposeful in building our own skills so that when we get people together and we try to lead people into creative sessions, creative thinking sessions, they feel confident and they feel like they want to see you as an expert as well, and feel confident that they are in, you know, with someone who they can really look up to and work with in this creative thinking environment. So I think both sides is very important, and we always tend to neglect our side as a practitioner. And for all practitioners out there, I want to say that, you know, take an extra step, take a step different from what you usually do, just outside of your lane, because that will help you mentally just understand and create different dots. And those are connecting different dots or multiple dots is what creative thinking is all about. So stepping out of your box and sort of nurturing that left part of the brain for additional creative thinking growth.
Now, that's really a great point, Ellen, because when you know, the classic definition of convergent thinking is to select and strengthen ideas, right? And part of strengthening ideas is actually bringing together more than one idea. And the really creative, innovative things are often these connections from one field to another. So if you've never seen how automation really works, there's no way you could ever, you know, think about how might I automate this process. If you've never, I love the arts. And so when somebody is practicing some kind of art, whether it's music or, you know, painting or writing or, you know, something like that outside of their work, they learn so much about that. And that also can enrich both the divergent thinking, but it can also especially enrich your convergent thinking, because it really can help with strengthening and coming up with the connections. You know, that all ideas are, when they come out, are pretty ugly, right? They need a little shaping, a little care, and often quite a bit of polishing before they're ready for prime time. And that's, you know, that's really all part of the convergent process. So let's talk a little bit about convergence now, because, you know, one of the things that we talked about already is that a lot of people are trained in business. And I also think it's true that many people who sort of tend towards the quality side, Lean Six Sigma, are people who do that because they are good at convergent thinking. And I also think we have some really good convergent thinking tools in a Lean and then a Six Sigma set, right? But how do you see convergent thinking differently with a more of a creative lens as opposed to just a Lean or continuous improvement lens?
So I think convergent thinking is a pattern thinking. So for people who are convergent thinking or strong convergent thinkers, they tend to think a lot in pattern. The if and then, yes or no, positive or negative, do's and don'ts. You know, so those are the people who are very pattern thinking. And pattern thinking is great. It gets you down to focusing the one or two things that need to be done in order to get this going. And when I think about convergent thinking and divergent thinking, sort of the two lenses, convergent thinking is a lot about the visual thinkers. They're thinking about different things. They're trying to build something. They're trying to imagine something. And pattern thinking is taking all of your imagination, all the ideas that you have, and now trying to make sense of it in some order. And then when I think about it from a funnel standpoint, it's kind of, okay, out of all those imaginations that you had as a team, what can we do first? What do we have in our little toolbox, or how much money do we have to spend on this? So it's kind of doing all those different criteria matching and kind of helping the ideas go down that criteria and seeing, can we make this happen? And in order to make this happen, let's test, experiment, let's bring it back, let's develop. So that's all pattern development. And that to me is that convergent thinking piece.
I absolutely agree, Erlen. And I guess I'm thinking about that the tools are there and very similar in both areas. And when it comes to process improvement and the work that I've had the opportunity to do there, there's this readiness and willingness to converge, and the tools will take you there quickly. And again, it comes down to holding back on our modus of operandi, the way that we normally operate. We get there and we get there quickly. And I have to look for, ensuring that all voices are heard, that we are understanding, what the true criteria are for, coming to whatever the convergent decisions are. But again, it's that deliberate nature, just making sure that we're not getting there too quickly. We're not still cutting off some of the, the good stuff, some of the lean meat. It's not all fat. We are really trying to hold on to as much of the good stuff for as long as we need to in order to build it. Because again, there's that cyclical, maybe you transform the idea a little bit here, and then something drops off and something else is added, and then you're still working with that idea and something else drops. So, but a lot of times in convergent thinking, especially when it comes to process improvement, because it is so, we're all so professional and so knowledgeable, and we're efficient. My concerns that I have had to deal with is still leaving it kind of mushy. We don't like mushy. We want definitive and we want it quick. So it's really just trying to play those two concerns, getting to where we need to get to in a timely manner, but making sure that we don't get there too quickly without full consideration.
I'd agree. That's something I've seen quite a bit, because I tend to find that there are more people who are comfortable with convergent thinking than divergent thinking, that they, they want to move very, very quickly. And maybe to Erlen's point is all right, let them move quickly to their first experiment, but don't allow them to think that's the only experiment, right? You're going to have to come back and do another experiment, and you're probably going to have to think divergently about what the results of that experiment meant. So, I feel like it's a heartbeat inside the whole process. You're thinking divergently, you're thinking convergently. And Kim, to your point, a lot of it is about being deliberate about it, to be as deliberate about one phase or lens as you are about the other, knowing that some people are going to be more comfortable in either place. And at the end, there's always somebody saying, when are you going to finish, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think leadership is also very important, as teams need to understand clearly what the direction is from the leadership in terms of, are they okay with being, you know, being agile. So if we go down the process, so I know we talked about like divergent thinking and then convergent thinking, but it's not a start and stop and then you start the convergent thinking and then you'd never get to divergent thinking. It's an ongoing cyclical process. So when you're doing your convergent thinking in the process, you're going out there, you said, oh, we had all these ideas, we're ready to implement it, let's experiment, test. But when we do that, we learn about something totally different about the customer, about a product, advantages or disadvantages. We have to be willing to, at that point in time, take a pit stop and do divergent thinking again. And leadership becomes so critical because leadership drives the conditions in a project team. What are the conditions? Are we really going to force the team to implement as soon as possible without, you know, giving them the leeway and the space to come back to the drawing board when needed, especially when they have certain things? Because team who works down on the ground in the project is very critical to in terms of creative thinking, but so is the leadership. And if the leadership is not continuously providing those successful conditions for creative thinking throughout the life cycle of the project, then it's not a great formula for success. Even if we did great divergent thinking in the beginning of the project and just never continued to do that and take a pit stop during the course of the project implementation, test and experiment part of the project life cycle. So, and it's also important even in process improvement. We do process improvement, we deploy it, hand it over to operations. But in that process, if there's any learnings, we have to be ready as a team, especially leadership, to come back and be okay with letting the team take that, you know, segue, go out there, experiment, find out what's going on, test our hypothesis, and then come back and change the strategy if needed, and then go forward and successfully implement.
Yeah, and have you ever had a team say, well, I just want to know what the leaders want? Have you ever had a leader come in and be disappointed because the team didn't come up with what they thought was the solution?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. We've had teams where the leader was either a part, you know, there have been situations where the leader was in the room, which is a whole management issue in itself. As well as where the team knew exactly what the leader wanted and was driving towards that. So you have to, you know, work to move them in a different direction while also ensuring that the leader is okay with moving in a different direction.
Yeah, I think, Erlynn, what you said about, you know, the leader being willing to be agile and to be aware that you might have to pivot. In fact, if you're doing something really innovative, you probably will have to pivot. And that's a whole, you know, sort of coaching for the continuous improvement leader to take on as well.
Now, yeah, go ahead.
I mean, if you really want innovation, sometimes it's going to be really surprising.
Yeah, the leadership level requires a lot of coaching because I think leaders have traditionally had a different way of working in the corporate environment in terms of traditional project management or process improvement. They were asked to follow the rules, but recently or just this past half a decade, organizations are shifting to more of, you know, grassroots approach and more of ideas coming from the grassroots and the leaders to go in and implement that and support the team. So there's coaching not just needed at about creative thinking, coming up with ideas with the people, but in my role, I end up talking more to the leaders to help them understand that it's okay. And then like Kim said, sometimes the leader has you know, spoken about their vision state so many times that the team feels like they are just there to now deliver on that vision or deliver on what the leader wants. So it's one of those things that we really need to ask questions from different angles as to how did we come to that conclusion? What data do you have to support that? What have you not talked about? What have you not? What are you not thinking about here? Are you thinking about just one customer? What about the other customers? So just kind of asking them different questions and also in different ways to make sure that they're covering ground for several things is one of the ways I approach it. And then the second part is I always try to convince the leaders to stay outside of all these working sessions. Like they can't be in these. It has worked great, but sometimes it requires several coaching for the leaders to say, when they come out of the group, they are all energized, but then the leader is not so energized. So sometimes that also becomes a part of on me to then go back to the leader and make sure the leader is also coached and is up to the level of creative thinking, just like the people in the room who are now totally energized and have been transformed in their way of thinking.
You know, this whole idea of leadership and their connection to innovation, it really takes me back to the importance of the culture within the organization. And I recognize that there are times when we need to act on the less innovative solution as a test and a monitor and tracking the progress. And, you know, unfortunately, you may have to act on several different less effective and innovative solutions and track and monitor and run them as tests to prepare a leader for that scarier innovation. Because again, it's really what, you know, I always think about what did that individual do to get to where they are within their career? What are the characteristics that they're being rewarded for? And in some cultures, innovation is simply not on the list in its truest form, you know, and what innovation means within my organization is not interpreted as innovation in yet another organization. So sometimes we may have to go through a couple learning cycles with a team before you get to the more innovative solutions.
And that's exactly, you know, how it works all over the world, right? I mean, some, you know, overnight success usually comes after years of work. So,
yeah.
Right. Right, you know, there are a lot of experiments on the way. So I'd just like to wrap up by asking both of you, for a young person who is studying their career in Lean or Six Sigma or continuous improvement, what's your words of advice for them? Kim, would you like to go first?
Well, I would say, I think this applies to not only process improvement, but individuals starting their career, and this is advice that I was given when I began my career, is really focusing on the task at hand, learning what you can, operationalizing it, and focusing on the work, include, of course, having goals set within your organization. But, you know, without trying to solve all the problems, keep your eye on your focused area, learning what you can, engaging within the work that you're there to work on, mastering that. And you'll find that, you know, having mastered that, then a lot of the other concerns will drop off. Now, I have to add to that. So, you know, I went into my career, you know, keeping that in mind, focusing, staying true to the craft, you know, learning what I can, doing what I can in within my area. But there does come a time when you have to look above and beyond your own, you kind of have to peek over the cubicle wall and you have to look out and see what else is going on. So, you know, get your stuff together, know what you're doing, you know, secure your career. But at some point you do have to look around and see, you know, what else is going on and who else I can help. What else can I do to, you know, improve the environment that I'm working in?
That's great advice. Thanks. Ellen.
Yeah, I like the saying that by Henry Ford, and it goes something like this. If I asked them what they wanted, they would have said faster horses. They wouldn't have said cars. And Henry Ford went and built, you know, the first car, or you know, the biggest plant for manufacturing cars. So my advice to young people, the next generation, I mentor a lot of young people in my community here in schools, is always around pick up your passion, get really good at it. Just like Kim said, you know, get your practice and get good at it. But while you do that, don't lose focus of what's going on and how the world around you is changing, because you don't want to end up only building faster horses. You want to help your organization build cars. And that is what will take our economy and help us be competitive in our city, county, and as a, in our country. And that's our job as we, as young people, go into these practices, especially of Lean Six Sigma. So my number one advice to young people is get your nose into what you like to do, get good at it, but also look for all opportunities every year to rotate outside of your job, or even just go sit with somebody and help them and let them show you what they do. Go to a different conference, go to somewhere else where you can just learn something, a different language altogether, like even if it's IT, my example. Mm-hmm. But just go think about it, because that will broaden the horizons for you, help you, give you different ideas, and you will start recognizing what's changing around you. And then that will help you become a much better professional in your own stream of work. And it will help you stand out. And that's what we all have to, I think, at some point, want to aspire to be, you know, good at what we do and help our community be competitive in all the solutions and services that we provide. So that would be my advice to anybody, is stay in your lane, but never be afraid to cross the lane and go see what's changing around you to build knowledge.
That's great. Wow. Thank you, both of you. Kimberly Green Goldsboro and Erlen Kakanad, thank you so much for traveling with me to the edges of Lean, to my favorite place where Lean and creativity come together.
It was a pleasure. Thank you, Bella.
Thank you, Bella. Appreciate it.
This is Bella Ankelbach, and I'd like to thank Kimberly Green Goldsboro and Erlen Kakanad for being my guests on the edges of Lean. How are you building your creative thinking skills? How are you applying them in your continuous improvement work? Please join me in exploring more of the edges of Lean. There's a lot to learn. The Edges of Lean is written and produced by Bella Engelbart. This is a Lean for Humans production.